and welcome back to Paleo Party. We're in between seasons here, but while we're busy behind the scenes, we've put together some little bite-sized episodes to keep the party going. In these Paleo Party shorts, we'll be chatting to an amazing group of fossilologists and asking them to tell us a little bit about their favourite fossils. We have an amazing selection of ancient beasts that we're going to be talking about, and most of them are really obscure, so make sure you head over to our website, www.paleoparty.weebly.com, where you can find out lots of information and even photos of the critters that we're going to be chatting about. Anywho, let's get this party started and meet today's guest.
I'm Steve Brusati. I'm a paleontologist. We study dinosaurs and mammals and other vertebrates, and I'm a professor at the University of Edinburgh here in Scotland.
What is your favorite fossil?
It is a nearly impossible question to answer. Kind of like whenever I go into a school, at least in the pre-COVID days, and then do a dinosaur talk to kids, and I would always be asked my favorite dinosaur, and you know, I'd always say it's like asking a parent which one of their children is their favorite. Maybe you know, but it's hard to say. But for the sake of this, I'm just going to make a call, and I'm going to say it's this dinosaur, this feathered dromaeosaurid raptor dinosaur called Zhenhuanlong, which I described a few years ago from China with my dear friend and sadly my late friend Junchong Wu.
That wasn't what I was expecting, and also have never heard of, so this is really good. Why is this dinosaur in particular the one that you've chosen to be your favorite dinosaur? Well, no, let me rephrase that. Why is this your favorite fossil?
It's my favorite fossil because the fossil itself as an object is really, really awesome. It is the most beautiful specimen I have ever seen. I think you should go look up a picture of this. You'll love it as a taphonomist. It's gorgeous. I mean, it's from Liaoning in China. This is where the famous feathered dinosaurs are from. There are thousands of feather-covered dinosaurs from this part of the world that were buried very rapidly by these volcanic eruptions, and that locked in a lot of details, not only of the bones, but of the soft tissues like the feathers. But even amongst all of these thousands of feathered dinosaurs that have been found, to me, this one really stands out because it looks like something you would see in an art museum. You know, the bones are pretty much all there of the skeleton from the head to the tail. They're chocolate colored bones, this beautiful mahogany color. They stand out from the gray limestone that they're preserved in. And then there's feathers all around the skeleton, a halo of feathers, and there are wings, full blown wings on each arm with fine details of those wing feathers. And you can see how those feathers, these quill pen feathers, are lined up on the arm, on the hand, in sequence, covering each other, just like the primary and secondary and covert feathers on the wings of birds today. So when you put all that stuff together, that fossil is incredible. And I was just very fortunate, very privileged to be invited by Junchong a few years back to study it with him.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So how old is this fossil? And what was the world like when this animal was alive?
Zhenhuanlong is from the early Cretaceous, so about 125 million years ago, give or take. And so by this time, the world was starting to look more modern. If you saw a map of the world at that time, the supercontinent of Pangaea was a distant memory. The land masses had been moving apart. Some of the southern continents were still connected together. They were really just beginning to break apart. But you could see the shape of the modern world coming into focus. But it was much warmer back then, generally. No ice caps. Sea levels were higher. Big parts of the world, including much of Europe and other low-lying areas, were essentially flooded. And this was a world where different dinosaurs were living on different land masses. And in Asia, in what is now northeastern China, in Liaoning province, you have this incredible ecosystem, not only of dinosaurs, but of mammals, of pterosaurs, of lizards and frogs and fishes and all kinds of plants, flowering plants, insects, all of these things living together in jungle-type ecosystems surrounding lakes with volcanoes in the distance. But these were a little bit unusual, these ecosystems, because it was a little bit cool. It was one of the colder parts of the world back then. Not that it was frigid cold, or not that it was, you know, a place that was covered in glaciers or anything like that. But for the Cretaceous, this was a warm part of the world. And there may have been parts of the year where it even got close to freezing. And it was in this setting that you had all of these dinosaurs, meat eaters and plant eaters, big ones that were about 10 meters long or so, and weighing about a ton, all the way down to tiny ones the size of pigeons, all of these things covered in feathers, preserved as fossils, the best evidence that we have of what dinosaurs actually looked like.
Wow, that's pretty cool. It sounds like a nice place to visit. I'd probably quite like to go there, to be honest.
It is, and I wish I could say I found this fossil, but like most fossils I study, I didn't find this.
Yeah, that was my next question. I was going to ask you, what can you tell me about its discovery? Like, how did that come about?
It is shrouded in mystery. All that we know is that it was discovered by a farmer. In this part of China, it's largely rural. There are rolling hills in this part of China. There are a lot of factories in this part of China, but more than anything, there's a lot of farmland. There's a lot of corn and wheat and other crops that are grown up there. And it was in the early 90s, early to mid 90s, that some of the farmers started to find these incredibly gorgeous skeletons of dinosaurs when they were out working their land. And since then, farmers have continued to make the most important discoveries. There are scientists, some of my Chinese colleagues, including Jun Chong, and people like Xu Xing and his team, that do go out and collect fossils from Liaoning. But the vast majority are found by the people who know the land, the people who live on the land, the people who work the land. And this fossil was found by a farmer. I'm sorry to say, a nameless farmer to me. I don't know if this farmer ever made himself known. But the fossil made its way to a museum, the Jinzhou Museum. And there it was preserved, and it was conserved, and it was put in a storeroom. It was kept safe, and Jun Chong, as one of China's leading dinosaur paleontologists, was invited to study it in about 2014-ish or so, 2013, 2014. And it was around that time, or a little bit later, that he showed me a picture of it. He knew that I worked on these kind of dinosaurs for my PhD, and he asked me if I wanted to help him study it. And of course, I jumped at that chance. The moment I saw a picture of this Mona Lisa beauty of a fossil.
The last question I have then is, I mean, you've kind of already touched on it, but what is it about this specimen in particular that makes it so interesting scientifically?
It is a beautiful fossil. And I do mean it when I say that you could see this thing on the wall of an art museum and it would be like, oh, that's some kind of beautiful, quirky print of an animal, of a bird or something. That's probably what you would think. It wouldn't look that out of place. But it is very important scientifically as well. It's not just a beautiful object. And the reason is, one of those words I just said, and that word is bird. This is a thing that looks a lot like a bird. It's not a bird. It's not a true bird in the sense of how we define birds as paleontologists. But it's a dromaeosaur, so it's a raptor dinosaur. It's a very close cousin of Velociraptor. And it was essentially one of the very closest relatives of birds. You can think about it not as an ancestor of birds, but as a very close cousin of birds. And a dinosaur that was on the cusp of becoming a bird. You can envision it that way. So it was about the size of a large dog. We're talking, you know, something that's maybe up to Golden Retriever, up to maybe St. Bernard size, something like that, when it was full grown. Covered in feathers, it had wings, but those wings were not quite big enough to keep an animal of its size airborne. If it flapped those wings, it probably couldn't have really done much in the air. So it's part of this emerging story that not only did feathers evolve long before birds and long before flying, for reasons unrelated to flight, but also wings. These more elaborate feathers, these feathers that line up on the arms, they evolved long before flight. And that's pretty interesting, at least to me, that's pretty interesting, because when we think of birds, say, why do birds have wings? Birds have wings to fly. Of course, the same reason airplanes have wings, but the wings are the airfoil. But they didn't evolve for that reason. They must have evolved for other reasons, because it is in dinosaurs like Zhenhuanlong that we first see wings show up in the fossil record, and these wings are too small to keep animals of that size in the air. So we think that most likely these wings developed for display purposes, essentially as advertising billboards sticking off the arms of these animals that they use to intimidate rivals, to attract mates, just like so many birds today do with their feathers, like peacock with its tail. It's not flying that. So we know birds today use their feathers for display. We know that these first wings in the fossil record are too small to keep an animal airborne. So it really is starting to look like that flight is something that basically evolved by accident when you have these dinosaurs that evolved feathers probably to keep themselves warm way back in the Triassic or early Jurassic, then elaborated those feathers for display structures. And then it just so happened that as some of those dinosaurs got smaller and smaller and those display structures got bigger and bigger, that when they started moving those arms around, those billboards provided lift and provided thrust just by the laws of physics. And at that point is when dinosaurs started to experiment with flight, and the rest is history. And that's where birds came from, and that's why we have 10,000 dinosaur species that are still with us today.
Yeah. Like the one that's currently sat on my windowsill, like staring at me.
Yep, and that's why I have the windows drawn. It's not just to keep the lights out, because of all the gulls here in Edinburgh that come off the North Sea and they wreak terror. And my little son is out in the garden right now, so we want to keep the gulls away. They're horrifically nasty. But I love them because they're dinosaurs, but they're nasty dinosaurs. You can see the inner Zhenhuan Long, the inner Velociraptor, anytime you see a seagull dive bombing.
Yeah, stealing chips. Has anyone looked at the color of these feathers? Because obviously that's massively popular, and over the last sort of 10 years, there's been a sort of really burgeoning area of paleontological innovation.
A few years ago, I went to China. The last time I worked with Jun Chong before he very tragically, very suddenly, very unexpectedly passed away. He was just in his 50s. But we sampled a lot of feathers so we could put those samples under, you know, SEM microscopes to look for melanosomes, the methods that people like Dr. Binther and Maria McNamara and others have pioneered. We've started to analyze some of those samples. I have students in Edinburgh that have worked on some of those, and we have really cool new data for a couple of dinosaurs. I won't say which one, so just stay tuned. So we hopefully get the papers out, of course, delayed because of the pandemic, like everything. But we did not sample Zhenhuan Long. We wanted to, but there were just a couple of bureaucratic snafus, and also there was another team that was wanting to sample it and maybe did sample it. I still am not sure. In any case, doesn't matter to me. I hope that somebody else has sampled it, because I'm very curious, because if those wings are like really colorful or have really intricate patterns on them, that would bolster the argument that they were display structures.
Awesome. That's so fascinating. Well, that's pretty much all my questions. You've rocketed through them and some brilliant answers. So thank you very much for all of that.
always happy.
Big thank you to our guest this week, and stay tuned as there are more Paleo Party shorts on the way. Remember, you can find details about the fossil on our website at www.paleoparty.weebly.com.
Paleo Party is an interactive podcast created by Thomas Clements, Christopher Dean, and Emma Dunn. This series of Paleo Party shorts is sponsored by a Paleontological Society Outreach and Education Grant. Our intro music is Voxel Revolution by Kevin MacLeod.